This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're with The Morning Run, and I'm Julian Ng together with Lynn Mark, and you're listening to Pressing Matters, where we speak to press members on a weekly basis to get behind the story. And this morning we have Joyce Goh, not from BFM, but the senior editor at The Age. Welcome back, Joyce.
Good morning.
Back.
Good morning,
How have
Julian.
You been?
Good morning, Lynn. I've been well. I've been well. Thank you for inviting me on to your Pressing Matters show.
No problem.
Show.
We'll welcome you always with open arms. And you're very hardworking. You left us and immediately you got to work already because
yes.
You have a piece this on this morning's Edge Weekly. And the title of that is The Digital Tax Conundrum. And this refers to the 6% digital tax that the government intends to charge foreign internet companies that are doing business here in Malaysia. So, Joyce, what is the conundrum? Why the conundrum?
I think it's just a bigger picture. I mean, firstly, you know, I like tax. I like the whole issue
of
tax.
Yeah, you're one of the only people I know in the world who likes taxes.
So you used to be BFM's tax queen, so now you've moved to The Edge and still doing tax stories.
Well, actually, my first job was in a tax company. I worked in a big four at Deloitte, Kasim Chan during those days. And I think tax is just, especially now when things are evolving so much, no longer is just business models are evolving. I think tax structures as well will eventually have to evolve because of what's happening. So when this 6% was announced last week, that's the rate, and they're looking at charging indirect tax for, you know, services provided by foreign service providers. So I had a chat with my boss and I was telling her, oh, you know, I think this is interesting because the dailies will all pick it up. So what are we going to do for the weekly? You know, we have to do an analysis. So I have to go to the ground and talk to these tax experts to get their view on what's happening on the ground. And it looks like the digital tax conundrum is not just this indirect tax, which is 6%. It is the whole, I guess, what's happening globally, how all these foreign service providers are providing a service, be it in Malaysia, Singapore, or any other country, and they're earning an income. But then again, because of how tax structures are, like in Malaysia, it is very territorial. It's based on if you earn income here and you have an established presence, like you're physically here, then you need to pay taxes. But what about all these foreign service providers who are not physically in Malaysia?
Yeah, I think that's a very interesting thing because I thought that was just going to be a kind of foregone conclusion where the government is in a position to simply just tax them, right? But apparently it is a thing. And there are challenges in taxing these guys.
Yes, because how are you going to execute that? I think execution is going to be difficult because you have jurisdiction over your country, I guess, physically here. But if they are somewhere else, how are you going to do that? How are you going to execute that? For now, I think this whole 6% that is on digital service tax, that what they're doing, our government is doing, is to level the playing field for, because like local guys, like when you pay for like your Astros and your iFlix and all that, you pay a 6% service tax. But if for Netflix, because they're not locally here, they're a foreign service provider, you pay for Netflix, but you don't pay that 6% service tax to a foreign service provider. But come January 1st, 2020, you will have to. So that levels the playing field between the foreign service providers and the local service providers. But we consumers have to pay.
Yeah, that's one of the things that you highlighted in your article as well, right? Because this new tax law is aimed at consumers and not at businesses, because businesses are already taxed under current laws. But is it that there's still not that much clarity currently on the ground as well amongst tax analysts?
Well, okay, so the consumers will have to pay for this digital service tax. But when it comes to direct taxes, I think in my article I brought up this point about what about income of digital service providers. So it's like the big boys, right? Like you have the fangs of this world, right? They're not physically here, but they earn an income or their revenue. So other countries are looking, it's not just Malaysia, it's not unique to Malaysia. You have like, for example, France. They are looking into this. They want to impose a 3% levy on revenue of tax companies that earn more than 750 million euros worldwide each year, out of which 25 million euros come from within France. So they want to tax that. They've gone ahead to announce that. I think the UK have announced something as well. They propose a 2% digital service on tax firms that make at least £500 million a year in global revenue. They've proposed it, but I'm not sure when are they going to actually. So they are, governments are looking at this. The income or revenue that these big boys earn, they're looking to tax that. But execution, I think, is key. Coming back to the 6%, this is just on digital service tax. It's not actually on your income.
I mean, just looking at the jurisdictional challenges of imposing this kind of taxes on foreign companies, which are giants, right? And they're very powerful companies. I guess there is a difference between imposing it as a sales tax that will be borne by the companies and imposing it as a consumer tax, a consumption tax. So either the company has to report the number of subscribers they have in a country, or the burden can just go to the consumers themselves to declare, because this is rightly so a kind of KYC that can be imposed by the government.
Yes.
Right? Either on the consumer or on the companies.
That's right. So I think when I was speaking to the tax experts, I spoke to one from Deloitte, PwC, EY, and Crowe Malaysia, and I think a lot of them are saying that they need more details when it comes to this new 6% digital service tax. How are we going to go about it? You know, how are they going to implement it? What kind of documentations is needed when it comes to registration, submission, and all that? But what has been announced is already that they require foreign service providers who provide digital services exceeding 500,000 ringgit in annual turnover, they need to register with customs and charge 6% tax on the services that their consumers consume.
Yeah. Another thing that you also raised in your article is the possibility of a social media tax. So obviously this new digital tax is the government trying to adapt to an entirely different landscape that we're seeing now. And the next step would then be to address small businesses that are using social media as a platform on which to sell their goods. And that's a very interesting angle as well that you took.
Yeah, actually this came from Kishan Dillon. He's the manager of tax for transfer pricing at Crowe Malaysia, and then he pointed out that social media is increasingly being used as an income avenue. Because, you know, I'm sure you guys, you know, that one friend or two friends who have like a lot of followers, or maybe not even
Instagram,
friend, an influencer,
Pinterest.
Right?
Yeah. Yes.
And who knows, they might tie up with a company or what and say, okay, I'm going to post up a photo of your product, or that I'm at this restaurant or wherever, a hotel, wherever, and then the company pays them for that post. How many of them declare that income?
You know, so that
I think was quite interesting, because it's true, this is a sign of the times, right? Social media, people use social media as an income platform, but are there leakages when it comes to taxes? How many of them declare?
But then you're pitching the very big fishes against the small fishes. I mean, a lot of these people who are doing the freelance income, gig economy, selling stuff on Instagram, Pinterest, Facebook, and so on, these are the small guys. And this is unlikely to, I guess, send a strong message to the public. Really, what you want to target are the big guns, right?
Exactly. So, there are different parts to the story. I also have the part where about the income on digital service providers. Those are the big boys. And I mean, we question, you know, what about the direct income, the income that they get, be it revenue or actual profits from wherever they get their income from? If it's from Malaysia, are they going to pay taxes to Malaysia? I mean, it's just looking at all these tax leakages that has come about because of technology, because of tech. The digital age that we are in right now, there are a lot of leakages when it comes to taxes.
Yeah, I think Bu Su Lin from the Malay Mail also wrote a very interesting article asking the question, and similar question to what I've asked when this news first broke, is that whether this is a middle class tax, because the taxes are very small to the middle class, but they mean something. And is this the only way to broaden the tax net for the country? Right?
Well, if it's a janji that they want to tepati when it comes to GST, then I guess so, because
you're talking about a $20 billion hole, you know,
yes,
and whether it's good to look at Netflix and Spotify to cover that $20 billion hole that
can
originally
cover?
Come from GST.
Right. So I'm always for GST. I feel that, you know, it's just not understood. It's a consumption based tax. It's a tax. It's fair. As you consume, you pay the tax. I think that's fair.
And rich people consume more, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, if they want to go ahead with that janji and they cut that out, then you need to plug the hole. How are you going to plug the hole? But like Julian, you mentioned, is it enough if you're going for the Spotify's and maybe even, you know, purchasing e-books and all that? Is it enough to plug the gap?
Okay, we're going for a break now, and we're coming back with another interesting story. RRJ Capital, a private equity fund, it's making its entry into Malaysia, BFM 89.9. You're with The Morning Run, and this is The Pressing Matters with Julian Ng and Lin Mark, as well as Joyce Goh, ex-Morning Run presenter, and now back to The Edge as Senior Director. Joyce, the
senior
other...
Senior editor.
Senior, not senior director, but senior editor. I'm sorry. Now, the other interesting article that you wrote about is RRJ Capital, which is a private equity fund that's coming into Malaysia. They have $12 billion under management. So what are the implications of this for the private equity scene in Malaysia, and not only for the PE scene, but for fundraising as a whole in Malaysia?
I know. I mean, it's a lot of funds. They have a lot of money and they're still onto their fourth fund. I think they're going to raise their fourth fund next year. I found it interesting that they were in Malaysia. They were never here as a fund, as a PE fund. They are here personally. They have a personal stake in Alliance Bank, but as a PE fund. So our
wait, hang on. They own Alliance Bank or they have a stake
personally?
Yeah, personally. These guys,
Richard Ong personally has a personal stake in Alliance Bank.
Is he Malaysian?
He is. They're brothers. Okay. Interestingly, what I found interesting. So our article looked at RRJ Capital, the PE fund. So the PE fund has never been in Malaysia. And then right now, they're suddenly here. They're spending a lot of time looking at Malaysia. So my first question was, why? Mm-hmm. Like after all this time, upon graduation, they've worked overseas. They've never been back to Malaysia. Why, after all this time, why are you in Malaysia now? Especially when a lot of deal makers are on the sidelines, they're all just watching and waiting, observing the whole current situation.
Well, they're also out of favor, right? Past deal makers are the present out of favors. I guess what is the answer to your question of why you're returning to Malaysia?
Well, they say that they want to give Malaysia a fresh look because they came on record and say that in light of the new government, they say that they want to spend some time here, see where are the opportunities. They believe that there's opportunities for public-private sector projects. So they're looking at a couple of industries and looking like they want to pitch for all these industries with the funds that they have. They're looking to allocate about 5 billion ringgit.
Right, and what are their short term versus their long term plans here in Malaysia? There are several industries, like I think infrastructure, that you highlighted that they are planning to spend that 5 billion ringgit on. So, what are they actually looking for?
Actually, they're really interested in insurance. That's one of the sectors that they're looking at. Insurance.
That's my favorite topic.
Julian Ng's favorite topic, indeed. I think that if you want to go into insurance, though, you need Bank Negara's approval. So I'm sure they're in talks with all these regulators. They're also interested in infrastructure, Lynn, as you mentioned, also looking at water projects. But because, I mean, I question them, if you're looking at all these like infrastructures, if you're looking at water projects and all that, can it be sensitive because of their ties to Temasek? Temasek has, they are invested into their fund, into RRJ's fund.
And they lost a lot of money in high flux, though, so Temasek might not be... Forget about the rhetoric.
Yes. That's Temasek, not RRJ, right?
Yeah.
High flux, yeah. So, I mean, to me, I feel if you're looking at infrastructure, looking at water, and if Temasek is in your fund, could it be sensitive? And he says no. He says at the end of the day, if it's win-win, because he says that they have their fund, actually 55% is made out of US investors, and then about 25% is from Europe and Middle East. So at the end of the day, he says that we have so many investors, it's not just Temasek.
I mean, with any infrastructural projects, funding is so important, right? So any guy who can come along that with a proposal to the government of how to reduce costs. And I think you have very smart people in PE fund. They would have ideas on how to do this and that. Of course, from a consumer viewpoint, whether that can be trusted or not, because sometimes those deals that are structured very attractive for the PE fund and not necessarily for the country, right? The consumers, that's where the sensitivity comes from.
Correct.
Also, right? These are strategic sectors in Malaysia.
Yeah, so I think we have to look at the actual details of the actual deal if they get one. But he does point out that, if you look at their track record, their internal rate of return is about 20% in US dollar terms. That's pretty good. And but he did share that, they feel that Malaysia, the top leadership, they're investor friendly. But then again, there's the inertia imposed by bureaucracy can be challenging for foreign investors. So can you talk about that?
Okay, that's important too. But I'm more also very, very interested about that story. Like another story of Malaysians making it good outside of Malaysian shores.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys, brothers, Malaysian brothers, forming a $12 billion US dollar PE fund. I mean, what's the story?
Yeah, and they're looking to grow that to $15 billion US dollars next year. They are very seasoned deal makers. Looking at Richard Ong, he is the older brother. He's the founder, chairman and CEO of ROJ Capital. He spent about, 15 years at Goldman Sachs. He was a partner and co-head of Asia ex-Japan Investment Banking when he exited the fund. And then you have Charles Ong. He's the younger brother, and he has worked in Temasek for a decade. And over at his time there, I think he served a couple of positions, but that includes, I think he was also chief strategy officer as well as chief investment officer. Very seasoned hands when it comes to deal makings for both of them.
Exactly. When you look at such people, and we hope that there are more and more of these kind of people coming into the country to just push us forward with ideas, right? New ideas of how to fund infrastructure. And, you know, guys like this would have no problem paying any kinds of consumption taxes that are leveled at them, right? Take away our Netflix and Spotify taxes and make these guys pay GST, right? I mean, I'm friendly to you, but you can afford GST.
But they're looking at rail as well and airports. So they're looking at pretty big projects. They do have money to fund it. It's just a matter of whether or not, I guess, they give the right pitch, right? Mm. And it'll be interesting to watch these guys, like what they buy into. Because if you look at their track record, they bought into NN, that's ING Group's NN, that's insurance. He likes insurance, they like insurance. And you can see that, you know, since they went in, listing price was 20 euros at that time. That was the largest IPO in Europe at that year, 2014, when NN listed. When I checked last week when I was writing the story, the price went up to 36 euros 88 cent. This was on April 9th. So it went up some 84% really since they entered.
Actually, but when you spoke to RRJ Capital for your article, had they already started reaching out to the Malaysian government for,
yes,
for pitching?
I'm sure. Yeah, because they're already doing due diligence. Mm. That's one thing that he revealed. So it must be quite serious already. I'm pretty sure that they've reached out and the government is aware that they are in town to, I guess, just sniffing for deals.
Yeah, I think it's not a bad thing because I think the government needs a PR bump as far as this kind of thing is concerned, because the stock market has been sort of languishing since the general election, and a general sense of very bad PR among the foreign investors going on since GE14. And also, Joyce, I wonder how this sits in with the new policy of the government turning infrastructural projects, changing them from PDP, the PDP model to the turnkey model. Mm-hmm. I'm sure these guys would have a role to play in that as well.
Yeah, and I'm sure, for me, it'll be interesting to see if they do get a project or what, of sorts. It'll be good to see what are the details of it, what kind of, like you say, PEs, because PEs, they would definitely want to exit, they'll structure in an exit. But in this interview, I asked them about their exit strategy, and they shared that they're in here for the long term. So long term meaning they gave 10 years time frame. But 10 years is a long time. I mean, even Charles said, you know, 10 years, that is two general elections, which is a long time.
Yeah, it is.
And I mentioned to them, oh, you guys are back, you're all in Malaysia because you're saying that the new change in government that has piqued their interest to look at deals here. 10 years, what if the government changes within 10 years? Then what?
And also, don't get me wrong, in spite of my earlier statement about that PR that's needed with the current Pakatan Harapan government, I like it that governments are standing up for the rights of the nation, right? So with this kind of sometimes purely financial deals that are struck between governments and these financial institutions, they must actually make sure that the rakyat and public can accept this kind of deals, right? Because we know from the toll roads, now we're trying to undo those kind of deals that are very, very painful to us right now. And that's very expensive.
It must be fair to definitely the rakyat and the taxpayers, right? So, so coming back to when I asked them, you know, what happens if you're here because of a new government and if there's, who knows, 10 years is a long time, right? And if there's a change, and Charles says that, well, they're not dependent on any government, they're not politicians, so I guess they're here, they just want to do business. 5 billion ringgit they're looking to pump into Malaysia. I mean, I guess we're all on the ground trying to figure out what.
Joyce, thanks so much for joining us, and you're always welcome back to the Morning Run.
Thank you for having me. It was good chatting again.
And that was Joyce Goh, senior editor of The Edge, joining us in this week's version of The Pressing Matters. The 10 a.m. news is after this, and Enterprise next, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.